Greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally and internationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 112 countries worldwide over the Internet. Now, for more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on 20 small private businesses when we come back. You know, under the terms of a contract called the Old Covenant, which was negotiated by Moses out at Mount Sinai, you and I are entitled to 33 articulable benefits, and those are benefits such as rain in due season, multiplied gold, silver, herds, flocks, and great wealth. Well, George Bush, our president, said that what Americans wanted in the last election was jobs, jobs, jobs. But that's not what George Washington, Thomas Jefferson, Ben Franklin, Moses, or God had in mind when they wrote our Constitution, our Bill of Rights, and the Ten Commandments. All of these authorities recognized that real wealth is measured in land, cattle, property, gold, silver, wheat, corn, beans, honey, and oil. It's not measured in employment. It's certainly not measured in jobs, jobs, jobs. And that's because there's no money in employment. There's a living, but no money. The money is in private business. The money is in sales. It's not in public business, and it's not in jobs, jobs, jobs. And that's why I contend that it's time that you cash in on your inheritance and learn how to collect those benefits of our old covenant contract and to do it in gold, silver, wheat, corn, beans, honey, and oil. You know, that's called property. Instead of, or the opposite of, credit, debt, usury, inflation, and more worthless paper. Now, if you'd like to learn more about how to do just that, why don't you call for more information on our CD Home School for Adults and order our free General Law CD package. That CD package is a 4-hour commentary on the law in general, and it's informative, it's entertaining, and it's educational. Best of all, it's free, and you can call and order one right now. The number to call, 417-273-4967. Now, again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, if you're online, you can go to our website, georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. Just click on the email and send us an email request for that free General Law CD package. Once more, that's georgegordon.org, or call us direct at 417-273-4967. Do it right now while you're thinking about it before you forget. All right, we're talking about what do you do to solve the problem. And most people, you know, they'll write or they'll call and they'll say, well, that's all right for you, Mr. Gordon. You know, you're a private businessman, but, you know, I'm a truck driver or a bus driver or I'm a housewife or I'm this, that, or something else. You know, I've been working for wages all my life and it's the only thing I know. Well, that's fine. But as soon as you lose your job, there will be a necessity. See, as long as you're employed, you don't have a problem. And you can continue on as long as you've got that job. It'll get worse and worse and poorer as inflation heats up. It's running at 18% right now. Our Fed chairman, Ben Bernanke, now is printing money, putting it into circulation to keep the economy from collapsing at the rate of 18% per year. Well, in 5 years, if you do that, in fact, it's less than that with geometric progression, but if you multiply that out 5 years, it's going to double the money supply. So in 5 years, it's going to cut in half your purchasing power. It's going to cost you twice as much money to buy what you're buying today in 5 years at 18% inflation. And in fact, it'll come sooner than that. Now, inflation, as I speak, is running at 12.78%. It's projected to 15% by the end of the year and 18% over the next 18 to 36 months. And I suspect that as they print more money and as inflation heats up and gets higher and higher, then you have to print more money to stay ahead of the inflation curve because the money is becoming worthless and more worthless as each passing day goes by. And if you're wondering why people don't save and the savings rate is in the tank, it's because everybody knows that the money that they're earning today isn't going to buy as much tomorrow. So they need to get rid of it today and get the goods and services that you want today so that you can maintain your purchasing power. Now, this happens to all great empires, nations, and civilizations and city-states. It's been going on for thousands of years, so it isn't something new. It's not some new phenomenon that came along with the Clinton administration or with the Republicans or somebody else. It's the ultimate end to the five motivators of human nature. It's vanity, jealousy, lust, greed, and fear. And those five motivators lead us to rack and ruin each and every time that we engage in them. Now, the objective here then is, well, what am I going to do? What do I do at my level in my position to give myself the best bang or the most bang for the buck? And so I started off by showing you here 2 weeks ago. I said, let me show you what the problems are. And so I went through some of the newsletters. I said, look at what these problems are. These problems are insoluble. They are leading to the collapse of the world's economy. And world collapses in economic conditions, like we saw in the 1930s, lead to wars. And those wars lead to death and destruction. And so I need to avoid that. I can't, you know, it's like World War II. I can't prevent the Germans from attacking the French and the Poles and the British and so on. But I can get out of the way. Now, Albert Einstein, back in 1935, I believe it was, left Germany. Now, this guy, Albert Einstein, was a Jew. And he took a look at the political conditions in Germany, and he said, you know, this is not good. I need to get out of here. And this guy was no piker. He was the head of the university there in Berlin, I believe it was. He had a tenured professorship there. I mean, this guy's, you know, at the top of his profession. And he left it all behind and left and went to England. And he did it in 35 before most Jews could figure out where this thing was all leading, where it was all heading. And he was one of the fortunate few that survived it. All right. Well, now, everybody had the same opportunity. There wasn't anybody in Germany that couldn't have left in 1935. But, you know, as time went on, 36, 37, 38, the window of opportunity was closing. And finally, there came a point in time when they couldn't get out. And even when you couldn't get on the train and leave for France, you know, there were still people that were escaping. And so that's where we are today. We're at that crossroads in our economy here in the United States. And you people in Australia and New Zealand and South Korea and Germany and Brazil, you're all in the same boat, because when America collapses, you go right with us. You go right with us. If you take a look at South Korean economy, the South Korean economy, you're dependent upon your exports to the United States and the rest of the world. And when the rest of the world stops buying your exports, you're going to be just as out of work in South Korea as we're going to be out of work when they export our jobs from here to India. And there's a feeling that goes along with this thing of losing your job. You know, it's a downer. There's no two ways about it. So now I went from, let me show you what the problem is, to the solution. And the solution to this is to stop practicing communism. That's what our problem is. We're practicing communists, and there's only two economic or business models in the world. It's all there's ever been. From the Garden of Eden forward, it's just been two business models. Today we call it the 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto that all of us are practicing. And the other is the 10 commandments, which at some point in time, a lot of us used to practice at one time in our history, but no longer do. And that's where we Americans are. See, up until about 1900, we practiced the Ten Commandment business model. Well, that is gold and silver coin. You Australians did that. You Canadians did that. And then you stopped. And you got a result that came from it. And that result is what we're trying to discuss now, trying to figure out, well, what am I going to do? So we went to work for these big corporations, and we did well. Hell, we were making money, and we were living our lives and doing our thing. But now we find that these big corporations are exporting our jobs to India and Pakistan and other places. And that leaves us unemployed. And so where we were making good money, now we're making just ends meet. And then most of us aren't being able to do that. So we're using our credit cards and going into debt. And we're up over our eyeballs in debt. So I pointed out to you the other day, or last week, I said, now look, here's what we've got to do here. We have to get out of debt. I can't do anything for somebody that's in debt. And so most of you people say, I don't know how to get out of debt. My conclusion would be, hell, if you knew how to get out of debt, you wouldn't be in debt. And the reason you're in debt is because you don't know how to get out of debt, and you don't know how to stay out of debt, and probably you don't know how to make money. You don't know how to make money. So this week I want to show you how to make money. Because that's what people will do. They'll call and say, well, you think you're so damn smart, then why don't you tell me what kind of a job I can get? And they get kind of belligerent, you know. And that's because they don't know. They don't know how to leave Walmart truck driver and become an entrepreneur. And it's understandable. I'm not being down on you. I'm just, I went through the same thing myself. I used to be a wage earner. When I started out at age 15, I worked for Frank Roach. At some point in time, I had learned how to be a contractor, a plumber, carpenter, electrician, remodeler. You don't know everything the day you're born. You have to learn this as you progress along. It's better if you learn this at an early age, when you're at home living with mom and dad teaches you how to be a carpenter or how to connect pipes and things like that. But, here you are 40, 50 years old, and you don't know how to do any of the above. And now all of a sudden you got to get out here in the real world and scramble to make a living, and you don't know how to do that. And so, you've got to learn how. So let's get after it. Mother Earth News. Mother Earth. They call it Mother here in the United States. It is a publication, been out for many, many years. And it's kind of a hippie book. It's a magazine, comes out once a month. I think it's still being published. I haven't seen one for a while. It used to be on the newsstands. But over the years, they run articles in there. It was for hippies and dropouts. It was for people that were leaving the city and going out in the countryside, and they were going to homestead a piece of ground. They're going to make their living off the land, these idealistic young people and so on. And a lot of people have done that. They just got tired of the city and the rat race, and they said, hell with it. And so they left. And they went out and made a living doing something else. And Mother Earth News, over the years, has published a lot of information on how to make a living at doing odd jobs. Well, you'd say they're odd jobs, but, it's for people that are carpenters. And they leave working for some contractor building houses in a tract someplace. And then they go out on the land someplace in Vermont or New Hampshire. They're out in the boondocks. They leave Boston and they go up to New Hampshire someplace. And they buy a few acres up there. And the guy doesn't know how to garden. He doesn't know how to plant seeds. He doesn't know jack diddly squat. So he got his inspiration from Mother Earth News or some other such publication. There's more than one. And now he's out here scrambling. It takes him several years, him and his wife, and they have some kids, and they're up there in the mountains, and then pretty soon they write a story. They'll write their family history here. Here's what we did when we left Boston, and we went up here, and we had to scramble to make a living. And many of these stories are really inspirational. I mean, these people went out here, and they had to start all over again. And sometimes they've got wives and kids, and they're telling you their trials and tribulations, one thing or another. And out of that wisdom, out of that experience, you and I can learn lessons and short-circuit the process so that I don't have to go through all of the trauma that these people have gone through. Now that this guy's already done it and told me how he did it, now if I go out and do what he did, I can probably do it a lot easier and a lot faster. And that's the value of listening to some guy that has done this before. And so I'm one of those guys. I've done this before. I went out, I won't tell you how much, but I'll tell you how much. I went out and made $1 million back in the 1960s in the contracting business. And then I lost it all. And then I went out and made $1 million in the manufacturing business. And then I went out and lost it all. And I remember a word of wisdom that came from General Patton, George Patton. And he said, it's not how high you climb on the ladder. He said, it's how well you bounce on the bottom when you fall off. And by God, I'm a good bouncer. Because I bounced off the bottom twice. And made a comeback, and so now I'm happy to tell you that I made my comeback, and I'm happy as a clam at high tide. But see, what my problem was is that while I could go out and make money, I couldn't hang on to it. I go out and make money, and somebody else steal it from me. So then I had to reevaluate that and say, there isn't any value in making money if you can't hang on to it. And there's no point in me going out and making a bunch, and then some guy comes along and steals it from me. So I got to figure out how to hang on to this. Now, for many of you, you're not so concerned about how to hang on to it. You're concerned about, well, how am I going to make it in the first place? You know, once I leave my job over here, what am I going to do? All right, well, all of us have talents and abilities. I don't care who you are, how dumb you are, or where you come from. You've got some kind of talent or ability. And what we want to do is to translate that talent or ability into a job, a business, that you can do for other people in your local economy. And to do that, you need some customers. You need some people that call you on the telephone and want to buy from you. Buy whatever it is that you're selling. And that means that you have to become a salesman. Now, all of us are salesmen. Every single one of us is a salesman. Whether you knew it or not, or whether you like it or not, you're a salesman. You're a truck driver at Walmart. Every day you go to work, son, you are selling your services to your boss. And your boss is happy, and he continues to buy your services day by day, week by week, month by month, as evidenced by the fact that he keeps buying from you. Now, I looked at that one time years ago, and I was working for $3 an hour, and the company was selling my services for $12. That was the shop rate, $12 an hour. Now, they're paying me, I'm a mechanic, and they're paying me $3 an hour. And that's not bad money. I mean, I'm doing fine. I'm happy as a clam. Here's 1964, 5, 6, long in there, so I'm doing all right. But I said, when I got ready to leave there, I said, well, can I make more money? So a guy offered me $12 an hour to change my occupation, give up, leave Boston and go up into the mountains of Virginia. Now, that was scary for a young kid. You know, I was 25 years old, probably something like that, 26 maybe. And I had my health benefits and all these bennies, you know, that you people are, you know, the American dream. And I'm living here in the city, and I'm renting an apartment, and by now I'm an apartment manager. And this guy comes along. Now, for $12 an hour, which is what the company is charging shop rates, see, he's going to pay me to go out here and fix water heaters and paint and patch roofs and do all this kind of work, you know, as a maintenance man in a bunch of apartment houses. And so I want to tell you the story. When I made the change, I moved from a solid, real job, you know, in modern Americans' parlance, to a self-employed job with no fringe benefits, no unemployment insurance, no safety net. Now, I'm going to get four times as much money, but I don't know how long this job's going to last. And instead of being able to go in every day and punch in on the time clock and know that next week and next week and next week and next week I'm going to get a paycheck, I don't know from week to week whether I'm going to get a paycheck or whether there's going to be a work out there. So it's kind of agonizing. If you have to leave something that's good for something that you think is better, that's a little tougher road to hoe. So if you're not ready to do that yet, just be patient. Because your job is going to be outsourced to India or Pakistan, and when it is, you're going to be unemployed. And then you'll have 13 weeks to figure out what to do next. And as time progresses, there will be less and less jobs available. See, there's going to be more and more people competing for those same jobs. So if you get 10 people competing for 6 jobs, and there's 4 people that are going to have to go on unemployment for an additional or an extended 13 weeks. And again, you know, if there's 6 jobs for 10 applicants over there, at the end of that 26 weeks, your unemployment's going to be cut off, and you are not going to have a job. Well, at least 4 of you aren't. And so for those 4 guys, what are we going to do? Well, what we're going to do is we're going to work for the 6 guys that have got a job. We're not interested in working for the 4 guys that don't have a job, because if they don't have a job, they don't have any money anyway. So let's concentrate on what are we going to sell to those 6 guys that do have a job, because, you know, they've all got aspirations in life. Now, everybody likes a bargain. Everybody likes a deal. And so the deal that we're going to offer is that we're going to sell them whatever it is they want to buy for half whatever they're paying. That's the magic number right there. So just tuck it away in your heart. Write it down on your paper. Now, last time I showed you, the cash value for something is 25% of its retail value. That's the cash value. Okay, now our objective here is to buy it for a dollar and sell it for two. Now remember, we call that a keystone markup. So write it down. When we buy it for a dollar, we're going to sell it for two. So if you did not know how much your markup should be, if you didn't know when I buy something, how much should I sell it for, the answer is double what you paid. Double what you paid. So if you go into Best Buy and you buy a big screen TV for $2,000, that's the full retail price, then our objective is to go out and sell that television to somebody, one of these six guys, for $4,000. Okay? You understand that? That's our objective. That's our markup. Now, why don't you test it? Go into Best Buy, buy a $2,000 television, and then go out on the street and start talking to people and tell them, I got this neat television I want to sell it to you for $4,000. And pretty soon somebody's going to say, why, you nitwit, you fool, you blind, why would I pay you $4,000 for this TV when I can go in and buy a brand new TV from Best Buy for half price, $2,000? And that illustrates my point. The guy wants to buy where he can buy it at half price. All right, so it becomes pretty obvious to us that where we buy is very important. So if we're going to buy our products, buy our inventory at retail from Best Buy, boy, we're going to have a god-awful hard time selling that. So let's take a page out of Best Buy's book. Where does Best Buy buy the big screen TV? Well, Best Buy goes out and they buy the TV from Zenith or Motorola or Sanyo or some electronics company. And how much do they pay for it? They pay half price, $1,000, from the manufacturer. That's right. When Best Buy buys a TV, they pay $1,000 for it, and they buy it from Japan, they ship it to the United States, they uncrate it, put it on the showroom floor, and sell it to you for $2,000, and they double their money. See how simple that is? No fuss, no muss. All right, that's what we want to do. And so if we want to sell big screen TVs, and we want to make some deals out here, then we have to buy it at half price. Now, let's suppose that you went over to the Sanyo people or Motorola and you said, hey, I want to buy a television from you. And so you buy it for $1,000. All right, so here's Joe Sixpack and he's got a TV for $1,000 from the manufacturer. That's you, Joe. And now you're competing with Best Buy. Now, where would you rather buy your big screen TV? From Joe down on the street corner or from Best Buy? Well, if I had my druthers, I'd rather go down and buy it from Best Buy or Walmart or somebody where I'm going to get a warranty. Whereas, you know, the television goes haywire after a month or 6 months, and I can take it back to the store where I bought it and they'll give me another one. Which you cannot do with a Joe that's selling TVs down on the street corner. So right away, Joe, you can see, even though you can buy this TV from the manufacturer at the same price that the big guys do, Walmart and Best Buy, Target and so on, that people are going to be reluctant to buy from you. So we got to have a little better mousetrap than that. Better mousetrap. Now, let me tell you about some guys that have some pretty good mousetraps. These guys that have better mousetraps are called pawn shops. And every now and again, somebody gets into financial trouble. So he loses his job, and now he's selling his big screen TV. Now, the guy went down, he paid $2,000 for this big screen TV, and he bought it at Best Buy or Target or someplace, and he took it home, and he used it for a year, see. Warranties run out on it. And he's got his TV, but now he doesn't have a job. His unemployment's run out. He's one of those four guys that can't find a job. Doesn't know what he's going to do next. So he takes his TV down to the pawn shop, and he says, how much can I get for it? And the guy in the pawn shop says, I'm going to give you $500 for that TV. $500. And so now the guy in the pawn shop has the TV, and it's sitting there, and he prices it at $1,000. $1,000. Now, along comes some guy looking for a big screen TV, and he doesn't want to pay $2,000. This guy is a bargain hunter, see? He's a scalper, a shark. And so he goes around, and he's looking for a big screen TV, and he's looking for a steal someplace. So he goes into the pawn shop, and he says, "How much for that big screen TV?" And the pawn shop guy says, "Well, here's the warranty, and it's still got 3 months to go, and here's the big screen TV, and I got it plugged in. Here's how it works. And you can have this big screen TV for $1,000. That's half what you'd have to pay for that if you bought it down at Best Buy. All right, now just picture this. You want to buy a big screen TV, and you can buy one at Best Buy for $2,000, or you can buy one from Charlie down at the pawn shop here for $1,000. Where do you want to buy it? Well, there's a lot of customers out there that want to save $1,000, and so they'll buy it from Charlie down at the pawn shop and take it home, live their lives happily ever after. Now, watch what happened here. Some poor sucker went out and paid $2,000 for his big screen, and then sold it for $500, took a $1,500 bath. Some guy bought it for $500, sold it for $1,000, and doubled his money. Got a full Keystone markup on it. How you like that? And that's what we want to do. That's what we want to do. We want to find something somewhere that we can sell. Now, big screen TVs, you know, are deals that come along. But, you know, there's cars and boats and there's jewelry and there's diamonds. You know, there's all kinds of things that just kind of turn up. And the trick to this is that you don't want any inventory. You don't want to take your capital and go out here and buy a bunch of stuff, because you got to have a place to put all that stuff. A store, a garage, a warehouse. You got to have some place to put it. So one of the neatest deals that I've ever discovered here is selling something that somebody else wants. And so in the underworld, let's suppose that you got a Corvette, and or a BMW or a Porsche or something like that. And so you are driving your Porsche and things are going along great. And one day the transmission goes haywire, and so you have it towed into the Porsche dealer, and he says, "You gotta have $5,000 for a Porsche transmission rebuild." Oh my God. Choked you up, and you gasp and ask yourself, why in the world did I buy a Porsche instead of a Yugo or a Volkswagen or something that I could afford? And so you go down to the pool hall and you say, "Oh my God, I don't know what I'm going to do. My Porsche lost the transmission out of it." And so some guy walks over and says, "Oh, you need a Porsche transmission? What's the make, model, and serial number on?" So you give it to him. He says, "Hey, listen, I can deliver to you a Porsche transmission, just like you got there. Used, of course. And I'll do it for $1,500. And right away, you're looking for a deal, right? So you say, "Well, yeah, okay, I can afford $1,500. I'll pay you $1,500. And so this guy goes out in the middle of the night. We call it the midnight auto supply. And he steals this Porsche transmission out of some guy's Porsche parked in his driveway at 2 o'clock in the morning. This guy goes out and removes this Porsche transmission out of this guy's car in the middle of the night with no dollies, no transmission jacks, no light, does it all by feel in the middle of the night. Now, that's a mechanic. And he makes more money than Mr. Goodrich. And he steals this, and he sells it to you for $1,500. This is what we call the underground economy. Now, I'm not advocating that you do this. I'm just pointing out to you, this is the principle that we want to work off of. We don't have to go steal these transmissions, but what I'm pointing out is that this guy has no inventory. He doesn't have a shop someplace that he's paying, you know, a business license and paying payroll taxes and license business insurance and stuff like that. He has no overhead. And he's not paying anything for his material. He's not even like the pawn shop guy to pay $500 for the big screen TV. Hell, he's got his inventory's free. Now, I'm not advocating that you steal. What I'm advocating is that we've got to have a source by which we can find what it is that we're looking for. So whatever it is you're looking for, you need to have your ear to the ground and your eye on the ball so that you know where the bodies are buried. You know where the transmissions are. You know where the big screen TVs are. You know where the boats and the cars and all this stuff is. And then when you see somebody that has something for sale for $500, then you say to yourself, well, gee, I need to turn a buck on that. So you go find a buyer. You find a buyer at $750 or $1,000, say. Then when you find a buyer, you run out and you buy what's for sale and then deliver it to the guy that's looking for it. And you become what's known as the middleman. The middleman, that's the salesman. That's what old Henry Kaiser advised us. Remember, in the last program I said, find a need and fill it. So down at the pool hall, you're looking for a need. So when a guy walks in and says, well, I've got a need for this transmission, well, then you know where to make a sale, don't you? There's a customer. Now, you got to go find a transmission. Now, let's suppose you go down to the auto salvage yard and you find a transmission. And let's suppose the transmission, you know, is $1,000, and you come back to this guy and say, listen, I got a transmission for $2,000. Hell of a lot better than paying $5. And I'll put the transmission in for you for $300-$500. Now this guy for $2,500 can get his Porsche fixed instead of paying $5,000 to the Porsche dealer. And here you are working at half price. See where we're at? Now, to do that, you've got to be a mechanic, don't you? So for all of you mechanics out there, there are deals out there. There are people with Porsches, and their transmissions go out. And when they go to the Porsche dealer, that's the retail price. And we need to do that for that guy for half price and double our money. That's all there is to it. Buy low, sell high, have a Keystone markup. And we're going to practice the Ten Commandments at the same time. How's that? The Ten Commandments business model. Yeah, I got to give you a reminder here that you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review. And we're sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 112 countries daily worldwide over the Internet and radio. If you'd like more information about The Law School and The Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. The law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. That's 8 schools and all. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school. It is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc, and the law school website, or the law or website rather, is updated weekly and has our radio log schedule and archives, and that can be accessed through the website as well. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. That's for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Now, the law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order yours by calling the law school at 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief. The Law Hour and Editorial Review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program, and we often endorse and recommend books, papers, periodicals, and newsletters to our listeners. Now, these endorsements and recommendations that we give out don't mean that the authors and publications that we endorse are necessarily going to reciprocate. Keep in mind that most of these authors and publications cited here on the Law Hour and Editorial Review, they may be hostile, number one, or they may be political or religious, they could be economic. Sometimes they're sectarian or racial, and sometimes they're ethnic partisans, whose viewpoint may not be totally endorsed here at the Law Hour and Editorial Review either. Now, these opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine. They're mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the views, beliefs, or opinions of the advertiser, sponsors, management, or staff of this radio network or of this local radio station. So if you'd like more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org, or call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, now we're going to put this into practical operation here. Let's take a look at a real live case. I had a student one time over in Honolulu, Hawaii. I was over there teaching school one time, and this guy is working for a building maintenance company. This is many years ago. He's working for $7 an hour, which wasn't bad wages, you know, $7 an hour back, you know, 25, 30 years ago was pretty good money, but $7 an hour in Honolulu wasn't very good money. In fact, this guy was renting a house for $700 a month on $7 an hour. I went over here in the States, that same house, you know, would have been renting, you know, where I live here, probably for $200-$300 a month. He's paying $700. And it was only a two-bedroom house. And he had to rent out one bedroom of the house to a tenant. You know, it's called subletting. For $350 a month, I think it was. So that would pay half of the rent, and then he'd pay the other half. And he's a working stiff, you know, but he was a pretty good carpenter. And he had gone to Hawaii some years before. He'd been over there for 10 or 12 years. He got over there. He wanted to go to paradise, and so he did. And then he couldn't make it over there. That Hawaii over there, it's a good place to visit, but it's not necessarily a good place for you to live because it's really a high-cost place to live. Whereas where I live here in the Ozarks, it's a low-cost place to live. Low-cost, low wages. As opposed to high-cost, high wages. And so you'll find, you know, as you go through life, low-cost, low wages is easier to live than high-cost, high wages in New York City. I mean, that's just the way it is. I mean, you can sit there and say, well, I don't understand why it works that way, but I'm telling you, it is. So if you want to make $25 or $50 an hour, go move to New York City, where it costs you $55 or $60 an hour to live. See? Or you can come here to the Ozarks and you can work for $6 or $8 an hour, where it costs about $5 or $6 to live. And you end up at the end of the day with an extra dollar or two. In New York, you end up $10 short of being able to make ends meet. And here in the Ozarks, you end up with a dollar more than you spent. You don't make as much money, but you live better. Now, this guy's living in Honolulu, and he's just barely able to make ends meet. In fact, he said he would leave and go back to the States if he could escape, but he'd never been able to get enough money to buy an airplane ticket to get out of there. So, there he was, stuck. So I said, well, why don't you get off this wage earner thing over here and go to work for yourself? And he said, well, I don't have any idea what I could do. And I said, son, what you do is what you're doing right now. What are you doing right now? He says, well, I'm painting. Well, that's what you want to do. Son, let me tell you, if you're a painter, you can forget about computer programming. You know that? There's a lot of people out there that know how to program computers, and if you're a painter, you know, you're going to fall right on your face out there. You have to do something, son, that you know what to do. So if you're a computer programmer, you probably don't want to paint because, you know, there's painters out there that know how to paint. They can put on a lot of paint in a hurry. I had a guy working for me one time. His name was Jess Sears. And I was painting a house, painting the exterior of a house in Boise, Idaho with Jim Honey. And we were up painting the dormers. And these dormers had these little small panes of glass in them, you know. About 6 by 8 or 6 by 12 or something like that, or 8 by 12 inch panes of glass, and just dozens of them. And I got all these sticks, and it takes a lot of time, effort, and energy, you know, to cut in all these sticks, you know, and keep the paint off the glass and all. And this guy pulls up in a car, and he got out, and he's there with his wife. She's driving him around. You know, he got out, and he looked up there on the roof, and he said, I see you're painting. And I said, yes, sir, I am. And he said, you got any need for a painter? And I said, no, sir, I don't. And he said, you've been painting long? And I said, well, yeah, I guess I've been painting for probably, oh, hell, I guess I've been painting for 5 or 6 years. And he said, do you like to paint? And I said, no, I don't like to paint at all. As a matter of fact, if I had something more intelligent to do, I'd be out doing it. And he said, He said, "Who's that fella up there with you?" I said, "Well, this is my hired man, Jim Honey." And he said, "Well, how much you paying this guy?" And I said, "Well, I pay this guy $5 an hour." And he said, "Well, how long do you think it's going to take you to paint those dormers up there?" And I said, "Well, based upon my experience, I think that we can probably paint these dormers up here in about 2 days." So he said, "You're going to pay that guy $5 an hour for 2 days. That's 16 hours. So you're going to pay that guy about $60 up there to paint those dormers, and you're going to go up there and help him." I said, Yeah, I said, "That's probably about the way it's going to come down." He said, "Well, I'll tell you what I'm going to do." He said, "I'm a painter." And I said, "I'm a real painter." And he said, "I can paint all of those dormers up there in 8 hours. And if you'll pay me $40, which is $20 less than you're going to pay your man up there, I will paint those dormers for you." And I said, sir, you're telling me now that you're a painter and you want to paint these dormers up here, and you can paint these dormers in 8 hours, and it's going to take both of us 16 hours, and you're going to do that by yourself, and you're going to do it for $40. And he said, "That's it." And I said, "Son, you go get your pants on, and we're coming down off the roof, and you get your hind end up here, and you just do that for me." Now remember, he's going to paint these dormers for $40. I don't care whether it takes him 8 hours or 800 hours. Hell, I wouldn't care if he went up there and painted them in 3 hours and 15 minutes. He's going to paint them for less than I can do it for. And I'm a painter. But you know, out in the real world, there's painters and then there's painters. You know, and then old Jess, by God, now that guy was a painter. Because he got up there and he painted those dormers and he did it in less than 8 hours and he did a hell of a good job on it. And I paid him the $40 and I hired him on the spot. I said, Son, are you looking for a job?" He said, "Yeah, I am." I said, You're hired. You're my painter. You're going to do all our painting. Jim and I, we're going to do plumbing. We're going to put pipes together and we're going to cut boards. And we ain't painting no more. I quit." And old Jess took over. And old Jess, he was a pretty good guy. Now, he's working for wages. See? But the point I'm making is, did you see how he just hired himself a job? He just driving down the street and saw me painting, pulled up to the curb, got out and sold himself a job. Now, how did he do it? Well, he had to find out how to price the job. Now, you know, he might have, you know, if he was out bidding that job in, he might have bid that job in for $30. But he bid it in for $40 because I told him I was going to pay $60. So he cut the price by a third and said, "I'll do it for $40. Hell, if he had told me he would do the job for $60 and you can go do something else, I'd have paid him the $60 just to get out doing the painting. But, you know, he did it for $40. Now, there's a guy that hired himself a job. Now, let me show you how I did this guy in Hawaii. I said, I was driving around Hawaii the other day, and I noticed that up on the hillsides, this Hawaii, now it's got this beach down here, but there's a mountain behind it. And up on this mountain behind Honolulu, there's a lot of nice houses up there. And I'm an old-timey general contractor, too, see, so I'm driving around. And I noticed a lot of houses up there on the downhill side of the street. Those houses are built out, and on the back side of the house, they're about 3 or 4 stories high. That's the downhill side of the hills. And those houses have to be staged to paint them. Now, over in Hawaii, you have to have a building permit to paint a house. So if you're a painting contractor in Honolulu, that's the way it was back in those days. See, they practiced communism over there in Honolulu. And so that's good. Anytime you can find a bunch of communists together, those are people that stand in line and share the shortage. Those are the people we take advantage of. Us Ten Commandment guys, we take advantage of you communists. I know it's shameless, but, you know, you did it to yourselves. So, I noticed that there were a lot of houses that needed paint. I mean, the paint's peeling off these houses. And Honolulu is a god-awful hard place to paint, because it rains there every day. Now, how do you paint on a town that it rains every day? I mean, that's tricky. You know, not just the average Joe Sixpack now can move out of Los Angeles, California, and move to Hawaii and start painting houses now. Let me tell you. In fact, I was kind of dumbfounded, and I asked this guy, Dan, you know, I said, how do you paint these houses? He says, well, on a downhill side like that, you got to stage it, number one, but you got to tarp it. That means you got to hang a tarp off the roof. And then you got to work under that tarp to paint so that you can keep the rain off the paint. I said, no, you got to be kidding me. He said, no, that's the way you got to paint here. You got to tarp the job. I never heard of such a thing. You know, I was from Boise, Idaho. It rains up there 2-3 times a year, you know. And you usually get a week's warning, you know, before it rains. And so, you know, the day it's going to rain, then you just do something else. You don't paint, see. In Hawaii, it rains every day. Well, I said, well, that's really something. I said, well, what's it cost to paint one of these houses? So $25,000 is a typical paint job. You know, you call a contractor, they want $25,000. I said, oh, my God, $25,000? Why, where I'm from in Boise, Idaho, if I was going to paint a house like that, well, I'd paint it for $5,000. He said, well, hell, I'd paint it for $5,000 here in Hawaii. But, you know, the painting contractors have to have permits and licenses, and it costs so much, you know, and wages are so high over here, and all of the painters are union labor. You know, it just costs you a ton of money. So you're a doctor, a dentist, or a lawyer. You got a lot of money. You're living up here in the mountains, and you're making good money. But, you know, when you've got to pay $25,000 to paint your house that would cost you $5,000 any place in the United States, you're paying five times what a normal paint job would cost. Yeah, it chokes you up. I don't care whether you're making $1 million a year or not, you know. Hell, even Bill Gates would get choked up, you know, if he's getting gaffed five times what it normally costs. And there's places like that. And I said, geez, what an opportunity. Oh, my God, I couldn't believe my earballs when he told me $25,000 to paint a house. I said, okay, well, I got your new occupation. Hey, I got your new career is house painting. He said, but I'd have to get a contractor's license to paint. No, you don't need to do that at all. In fact, that's the problem, see? The reason that these guys are having to charge $25,000 to paint a house is because they're all union painters and they're all contractors and they're all licensed, bonded, and insured, and they got the government involved in their business and they're practicing communists over here. That's why it costs $25,000 to paint a house. What we want to do is practice the Ten Commandments. Son, wake up. What we want to do is we want to come in here and cut a fat hog in the back. Here's the way this works. You go out here and you find a house. Don't go down here to the slums, you know. You want to go up here on the mountain where all the people that have money live. Well, that's where the doctors and the dentists and the real estate brokers and all the people that are making $100,000 a year, they're living up here on the mountain, you know, in Bellwood Estates. That's where you want to go. You go up there and then drive around, you find a house with the paint peeling. Write the address down. You go back there about 7 o'clock at night, a little after dinner, knock on the door. And when the guy answers the door, you say, well, my name is Danny, and I'm a painter. I'm a house painter. And I see that your house needs painting. And you probably have called a painting contractor, no doubt, and they told you that the price was $25,000 or $22,582 or something like that, and it just scared the living hell out of you. And so you said, let me think it over, and you're still thinking about that, and I don't blame you. But I would like to paint your house, and I've got a deal here for you. I'd like to paint your house for $5,000. Now, if that interests you at all, I wish you would call me at this number and hand them your business card. See? And if that guy does not invite you in for a drink, then he is a dumbbell. Now, how are we going to paint this guy's house for $5,000 when the going rate's $25,000 and they've got little building inspectors running around inspecting all the time and they're going to lock you up in jail? Here's very simple. I'm going to paint it for $5,000 labor and you're going to buy the paint, Mr. Homeowner, and you're going to go down to City Hall and you're going to pull a homeowner's permit. And then you're going to hire me under your homeowner's permit to paint your house. And then I'm going to go down with my Datsun pickup, and I'm going to pick up the stage, see? and you're going to pay for the stage and the tarp, and I'm going to stage and tarp your house. And I'm going to paint your house, and it's going to take me about 30 days. And when we get through painting your house, you're going to give me $1,000 to start, $2,000 at the halfway point, and $2,000 upon completion. And you will have your house painted for approximately $10,000 cash out of pocket, which is about half or 40% of what you're going to pay a painting contractor. And if that deal interests you, sir, please give me a call. And this guy was inundated with jobs. He could not. He went out and sold his first job the first day. Now listen, this guy's making $7 an hour. Let's figure this out. How much? Working 8 hours a day at $7 an hour. He's making $7 times 40 hours a week. So he's making $280 a week times 4.3, $1,204 a month, of which he's got to pay $350 of that for rent, remember? And then this is a high-cost place to live. I mean, this guy's just making enough to buy, you know, bread and to pay the rent. All of a sudden, he sells a job for $5,000 for 30 days. He's making $1,200 a month, and now he goes out and he sold a job for $5,000. That's the labor portion of the job, which is all he's going to do, is the labor. And yeah, you can paint a house in Honolulu in about 30 days. It's hard work, and it's nasty, humid, sweat's dripping off the end of your nose. And he's out here painting a house a day, and all of a sudden he goes from $1,200 a month, 1,200 times 12 months, $14,400, about $15,000 a year. He moves up to $60,000 a year. Can you say paint, boys and girls? Paint. Can you paint a house? See, what you got to use here is a little ingenuity. See, everywhere you go, our Constitution guarantees us the right to contract. That's Article 1, Section 10. Government is prohibited from impairing your right to contract. You can go out and knock on somebody's door and contract with it. And you can do it in Federal Reserve notes, being better yet if you did it in gold and silver or silver coin. Now, I don't know if you can paint or not. Hell, maybe you can't paint. Maybe you don't want to paint. If you're like me, I don't want to paint. God, I hate painting. It stinks. You get that sticky glop all over your fingers, and it's nasty. Can I paint? Yeah, sure, I can paint. Any housewife can paint. For crying out loud, you don't have to have any talent to paint. Hell, you can paint when you're 16 years old. And it's just that I don't care much for it. But you know, when you're in desperate straits like this guy was, listen, here's the neat part of the story. This guy all of a sudden goes from $1,200 a month to $60,000 a year. In about 6 or 8 months, this guy's got more money than he's had in his lifetime. And he left Honolulu and moved to Atlanta, Georgia. He escaped Hawaii. Now, that was the bad news. Escaping Hawaii was the bad news. And that's because when he got down to Atlanta, Georgia, where painting a house is about $500, you know, back in those days. All of a sudden, he goes from $5,000 painting a house to $500 painting a house. I mean, back where Jess Sears is, you know, I'll paint those dormers for you for $40. And I'm going, well, if you can paint these dormers for $40, then just get your hiney right up here and do it. Now, you know, every one of us has a talent. You may be a painter. You may be a computer programmer. You may be a truck driver. We're going to talk about truck driving next. Really? Okay, you're a truck driver. Well, listen, truck driving, you know, takes some skill, takes some talent. I don't know if you, the rest of you people out there know that, but I'm an old-timey truck driver. And I got news for you. If you think just running up and down the road, viewing the dead jackrabbits, you know, on the side of the road over here is what truck drivers do, I got news for you. Now, it is true that you don't need a great amount of talent. I mean, you don't have to have a road scholarship, you know, or a degree from Harvard or Cambridge, you know, to drive truck. But there's some little tricks and talents that you got to have. And by the way, when I was driving truck, I made a lot of money. I mean, I made buku bucks. But I was doing something a little bit different. And here's the trick. Whatever it is that you're doing, you have to find a need and fill it. Find a need and fill it. So you take a look at what somebody's doing, and you say to yourself, well, can I do that better? Can I do it faster? Can I do it cheaper? Can I come up with an innovating idea that's going to save that guy money? Because that's the buzzword. That's what everybody wants to do. They want to buy that big screen TV for half price. They want to get their house painted for half price. They want to get the transmission back in their Porsche for half price. That's what they want. That's what we want to sell. We're going to sell the guy what he wants to buy. And the Porsche dealer has to charge $5,000. He's got union help. He's got licenses and he's bonded and insured and he's got overhead and rent to pay. And we don't have any of that. See, the pool room mechanic doesn't have any employment taxes to pay in union scale. He's just a little entrepreneur working for himself. But he's a god-awful good mechanic. Listen, there's just no mechanics out there like a pool room mechanic. None. You show me a guy that can take a transmission out of a guy's car in his driveway at 2 o'clock in the morning with no lights and no floor jack. That's a mechanic. That's no slouch. All right. Now, it may be illegal, but I'm telling you that guy is just a god-awful good mechanic. All right, now, with that in mind, there's a lot of guys out there that are just god-awful good painters and just god-awful good mechanics and just god-awful good this and that and something else. And so whatever it is that you do is what we want to do. You know, there's no point in changing horses in the middle of the stream. But we have to have a better mousetrap. We got to have a place to sell our skills to people that want to buy it and pay half price. So I showed you about how I did that with the contracting business. Shop rates are $25 an hour and I charge $12. I had customers coming out my earballs. In 16 or 18 months, I had 14 employees and 7 service trucks. That's how fast that thing mushrooms at half price. And that's the way little entrepreneurs get started. Now, of course, the government comes in and they threaten you. Now, you got to get a business license and you got to do this, that, and another thing. And so by the time I had 14 employees and 7 service trucks, now all of a sudden I've got to raise my prices to support all that overhead. And pretty soon I'm not competitive anymore. That's what happens to everybody. They grow their business until they become uncompetitive and then they go bankrupt. And that's where you're at right now because you've got an economy that's going downhill and your overhead is higher than you can afford to support. And so your business is going upside down. Happens every time. So what we got to do is figure out how do we cut our overhead and increase our profits. Well, hang on, boys and girls. Next time we'll be talking more about this thing of how to do just that. Now, meanwhile, back on the farm, let me remind you that you have been listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 112 countries daily over the Internet and radio worldwide. Now, for more information about The Law School and The Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. The Law School teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. Now, that's 8 schools and all. The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school and is open to individuals but by prearrangement. Now, the Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. And the Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has a radio log schedule and archives, and that can all be accessed through the webpage at georgegordon.org. And the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Hey, our time's up. We've got to leave it right there. So we'll see you back here tomorrow night, same time, same station, God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.